Want to know more about what your favorite ninjas have on their minds? Check out the American Ninja Warrior podcast. It's available wherever you get your podcasts, and it's a great listen for any Ninja Warrior fan.
You are listening to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone! Hit well. Deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 131. I am your host, Matt Lyons, and on this week's episode, we'll talk about some meatballs, talk about things that happened in the recent weeks of games, we'll talk about Tyler Naquin's injury and the potential return of Bradley Zimmer, Jake Bowers, and what it means for the Indians going forward. We'll talk about Carlos Carrasco making an emotional return to the mound on Sunday, and the potential of him to be sort of a fireman reliever, Andrew Miller type in the playoffs, and all that. And we'll look ahead to the Twins series, which is, at this point, the only series that seems to matter for the Indians, with the AL Central on the line. Before we get into all that, I wanted to read a review that we got on Apple Podcasts. It was 5 stars from Here Be Dragons NYC. He said, awesome info, hilarious. I love you guys imparting info about the tribe, but keeps me engaged with your humor and totally mixed metaphors. Keep up the good work, guys. Go tribe. Thank you, Here Be Dragons NYC. That's a very nice review. I like that. Thank you for reviewing those. If you're listening now, whether it's from iTunes, Spotify, wherever, leave us a review, share it with your friends, whatever you want to do. Joining me for all this, as we do every week, is none other than Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I'm filing a complaint with the Department of Labor. You're making me work on Labor Day, and I'm sick of this, Matt. I'm sick of this.
No, this is Sunday, Merritt. Remember, we record Sunday nights. What are you talking about? The sun is not out right now. It's not the middle of a Monday afternoon.
I'm not drinking coffee in my pajamas. No.
It's not a normal thing at all. It's fine.
Fine. All right. You escaped that one due to the non-instinctual? No, something. Non-live aspect of podcasts.
Yeah, you can't prove when we record this, Merritt. It is currently 9 o'clock on a Sunday night. You have no proof.
Son of a... This is how they get you, people. This is why we need to unionize podcasters. Because these damn editors are always getting on your ass about everything.
About doing the podcast.
About doing the podcast.
Yes. Up your ass about it. Jeez.
I'm fine. Hi. It's great to be here.
Doing great. Yeah, it is. It's nice. It's nice Labor Day weekend. It'd be nice if we had better games to lead into it so you can sort of enjoy it. But
yeah.
I wasn't focused on the games this weekend because I recapped on Friday and I was like, you know what? I don't want to do this again. And then so they were just kind of background noise for doing other things over the weekend. And then I watched recaps right before the podcast just to refresh of what happened. And oh, right. It was miserable. Everything about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Quite terrible. Quite terrible.
So on that exciting, upbeat note,
meatballs.
Let's talk about some meatballs. The best is what you mean. So mine, my first one, is I tried to find good things for these week's meatballs because I think we need it after getting swept by the Rays and whatever happens against the White Sox tonight. So my first one is Roberto Perez. He hit a home run. He hit on 112.8 miles per hour. It was the 11th hardest hit ball of the week in all of MLB, and of course it led the Indians. It was on a 3-2 count when the Indians were already up 7-1 over the Tigers, so it didn't really do a whole lot. But it was a ball that was inside, and of course, it's Roberto Perez. So when he crushes things, it's usually not anything except mistakes over the center of the plate. But this was a pitch way inside. It's a ball that it's the only time in the way that Baseball Savant splits up the pitches for the what they call game day zones, which is the ones that like MLB.com uses. It was in technically zone 11, which is sort of like the corner of the plate that's up and inside and just the inside edge. And it's the first ball that Roberto Perez hit in that area over 93 miles per hour this season. So it was a neat little ball that he absolutely crushed. And I watched the highlight of again, and his bat speed is just incredible on this hit. Like, he was looking for it. He knew where it was coming. And then he just demolished it. And then he was terrible the rest of the week. But that was a really good hit. And I thought it was worth commending him for, because I want him to be good again like he was at times this season. And maybe he can streak again as we head into the playoffs.
What if he just keeps on getting better and better in this very linear fashion?
Like, he slowly gets better at one zone every month?
No. I mean, like, last year he had where is he? There he is. He had what? An OPS plus of 42. This year it's 92. So if we were to continue that arc, it would be like 145 or something next year. And that's what I'm talking about. Next year he's going to hit 65 home runs or something.
So what if he slowly morphs into Mike Trout and then just flies right by him, is what you're saying?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying to you. Well, still maintaining a 220 batting average. I think that's actually
that's the qualifier. He's got to still have a 220 batting average. And then
that's my kind of player right there. I mean, he could still just walk a ton. You know, he could have like a 500 on base percentage and only hit 220, all dingers, baby. That's my kind of player right there.
A couple triples because he's Roberto Perez. He's got the wheels. He can fly.
True. He's known as Roberto Wheels Perez. I believe that's what was on the back of his Players Weekend jersey. Just the word wheels, the Z. Matt, the Indians have hit 784 balls over 100 miles an hour this year. Something like that. It's 780-something. I closed the page, and now I forgot what the number was.
I believe exactly. You.
But somewhere
I'll
in
take
that,
your word for it.
Somewhere in that realm. And, Mike, I was curious to see. The whole goal was to find out just how are the new guys doing in terms of hitting the ball very hard. And the answer is that Framber Reyes has hit the ball over 100 miles an hour 22 times while with the Indians. Now, he's only been with the team for, what, a month? And that seems pretty good, right? I mean, if you were to prorate that out to the entire season, that'd be about 110-ish, something like that, right? Interesting. Francisco Lindor's done it 123 times so far this year. And Carlos Santana's done it 125 times. So, because it's an Indians podcast, it always comes back around to praising Francisco Lindor. He continues to be the best player the Indians have had in a long, long time. And I love it. I love it so much. That's really the extent of the meatball, I suppose. I wrote down some other numbers. You know, Yu Chang has done it 5 times. Jordan Luplow in part-time play, 23. Yasiel Puig's at 25 100-plus mile-an-hour batted balls. Jose Ramirez, 78. Tyler Naquin, who's now dead, 56.
Rest in peace.
Your friend Roberto Perez, 68. So there you go. And next year he'll do that,
136 times.
185 times, actually. I've decided it's going to be more a bit steeper.
There's an increase now.
Oh, yes. So yeah, there you go. I don't know. I just thought that was, like I said, I just wanted to see how the new guys were doing in terms of hitting the ball hard, because there's so few things you can really control as a hitter. What's yours? What's your next meatball?
Mine, so it's a similar note to a weird slash line. It's a really quick one. Jason Kipnis, his slash line last week was 188, 188, 750. He went 3-for-16 with exactly 3 home runs and no walks. That was
all right.
Every single hit in the last week went out of the park, but he also had a terrible week otherwise. I would like to see somebody carry something. Is that the Roberto Perez line now? You need a higher on base percentage, I think. But
yes, yeah,
750
right.
Slash is about right.
I guess he had 2 home runs. So he figured he has 18 plate appearances over that many games. He had 3 home runs and walks 4 times. So that's a 450 on base percentage, something like that.
That's a Roberto line, yeah.
And that's a Roberto line. There you go.
When Roberto Perez is in the Hall of Fame, that's what his line's going to be. He'll have like a 200 batting average under his plaque, and he'll be good.
They'll call it a Bebo, and there you go.
That was a quick one, but do you have a final one for us?
I do. It's about Aaron Savale. He's not my favorite pitcher. I don't know who that is anymore. What is favorite? But I always like watching young players, young pitchers kind of flourish. And because he's such an interesting type, what with the way he attacks hitters and whatnot, it's very interesting. We talked a lot about the spin rate on his cutter and a sinker and all that sort of a thing. His curveball spin is in the 95th percentile, though. 95. It has 66.8 inches of drop, which is 6.6 inches more than the average curveball in baseball. That alone could be a fun enough meatball, because that's really cool, Matt. I've said before many times, I love curveballs. They're neato.
I believe that was your meatball before, right? The Aaron Savali spin rate is bonkers?
Just in general.
Or was that just a post? Yeah.
Well, that was a post about his, I was talking about his cutter and his sinker, how he's pairing. His spin rate, yes, in general. He must have amazing fingers or something. I don't know. That's the only thing I could think. But I like this too, because it's doing two things. First, it's just demonstrating that he has a great tertiary pitch, even, because the way we've talked in the past, it's like, what else is he going to do besides be this kind of guy who just kind of goes one way or the other with his pitch? You know what I mean? Kind of like a late career, a very fat man, Bartolo Colon. Well, that's basically what Colon has been doing for the last couple of years when he was still pitching, was he just was cutting the ball and throwing 2-seamers, throwing the same pitch over and over, but it would move any one of 8 directions. But Savali is also kind of communicating to us what kind of pitcher he could become, because if he has these 2 pitches that can go one way or the other, combined with a curveball that falls off the plate, that is a very intriguing pitcher who will, as we know, he's really outperforming his peripherals.
Hey, man, that was Meatball. I mean, at this point, your sigh is just part of the audio. I just need to put it in there. It always comes the exact same. It's like three meat slaps and then a merit sigh, and then the big meatballs come. So our first sort of news thing of the week is not a good one. Tyler Naquin was running down a ball in Tampa Bay. He was full sprint. His legs, he was planting. I think it was on the right leg, and then he came down. It looked sort of like something buckled in his knee, and then he did run into the wall, and then he bounced off and just laid on the ground and looked in like a ton of pain. Oscar Mercado ran over to him and then was waving as if Tyler died. There's a lot of urgency there to get him over. And he was eventually carted off, and they did an MRI the next day, and he had torn ACL. So he's obviously out for the season. It's a big blow to the Indians considering how downright competent he was this season. He wasn't an all-star hitter or anything, but he's been able to kill the junk pitches that he's good at hitting, and he's been well enough for an Indians outfield that's been beat up enough for this team. Jake Bowers obviously was recalled afterwards. He was the next in line, I guess, to be the left fielder. I believe he got a double. He tripped over the bullpen mound over nothing and didn't seem to notice it and dropped the ball. So he had an up and down day in his, not debut, but his return from being optioned. Bradley Zimmer is another option. At some point, he just came off the 60-day DL, but he was optioned immediately at AAA. The Indians said before they wanted to give him as much time and as much games in the minors to get back and get ready, I'd assume, so he can learn to make contact better if he was slow to coming back from the injury. So it's just not a good season for Indians for the injuries. It's everybody seems to go down somewhere at some point. Obviously, Jose Ramirez is gone now. Carlos Carrasco just came back, but he's not going to be a starter because of injuries. Jordan Luplo is just back now, but of course he missed a huge chunk of time. So, I mean, does this change a whole lot about the Indians? I don't think Tyler Naquin was the anchor of the offense by any means, but this is just yet another on top of a ton of injuries the Indians had, and he was pretty good for streaks of the season.
Well, the Indians are lacking in something that many other playoff caliber teams have, and that's league average hitters. I think Tyler Naquin was one of four, I guess if you want to include Mike Freeman, you can. One of five hitters who were active at the time of his injury with a OPS plus over 100. So it's troubling, I guess, to, I guess you can include Roberto Perez in there because it was 92-ish, you know, so.
Wow, that is a depressing stat. Thanks, Mayor. I didn't know the number was that low. That is a sad meatball that you've brought out in the middle of the post-meatball segment. And you're right, too, because Jose was barely league average, but he was injured, and then Luplo wasn't active, so.
I mean, yeah, you know, Reyes is at 89, Puig's at 87, so it's not like they've been, I think the fact that they are 79 and 58 with this utter dreck offensively, it's a statement to something. I don't know what yet, but it's definitely a statement to something or other.
And it might also be worth noting that among active hitters, let's see, where would he be? Brad Miller would be fifth after his comments about leaving. He hasn't gone any lower. His 92 WRC plus would still be in the top five, which is not a good sign.
Among Indians, yes. Okay.
Right, yes. Not in the baseball. He's 92. He's not still good, but okay, the Indians are not good. I got you off your track. I heard you say that. I went to look and I was like, oh, he's right. That sucks.
And this is yet another instance where I hate to remind myself and others that there are five former Indians from last year who would be top two or three hitters on the Indians this year, including guys, obviously, Michael Brantley. But also, well, now I can't even find him because they signed so many goddamn people. Edwin Encarnacion is at 115. Yeah, he's hurt right now. But again, that'd be a nice number just to have on the team at all, anywhere. But instead, they do not have that. And, you know, I mean, we're dealing with some small sample sizes here in Reyes, although we're at 107 plate appearances for him, 103 for Puig. And Reyes is just down for the entire season. So, I don't know. It's a little sad, but what are you going to do? Because this is the most snake-bitten year in Indians history. Not really, but, you know, of late, it wasn't going to get any easier.
Check out the American Ninja Warrior podcast for a behind-the-scenes look at all the action of the show and more with your favorite competitors. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Is this the most snake-bitten to, what is it? Snake bitten to good ratio. Like, I'm sure there have been times where they've been injured a ton and just terrible anyway, but as far as being a potentially pretty good team, I think everybody's healthy, they probably can still win. They would have won the AL Central. Like, if Lindor was here from the beginning, who else was out at the beginning? Was it Jose Ramirez was out? Kipnis was out, I believe. Like, if all these guys
Ramirez
were healthy the whole season.
Out, so, you know, yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he just was terrible. But if he wasn't in a slump for half the season, I feel like this is still a team that would have won by quite a bit. So that's, it's just the injuries and shit luck that's dragging him down more than anything. And
I mean, I wouldn't say quite a bit, just because, again, we're dealing with a Twins team that is hitting 150,000 home runs, apparently. But still, you're right. If all the pitchers were healthy and right, that yes, we'd have Shane Bieber as the fifth best pitcher. So they would be the best pitching staff in baseball running away from it all. And even with that, it's still, you know, pretty incredible in many different marks. So
yeah, I mean, I'm not too terrible at the idea of going with Bieber, Clevinger, and Savali if they have to, and then Carrasco. Like my dream is to have Savali as the starter, but if like a really short lease, and then Carrasco can just come in whenever he needs to.
Wow,
if he can pitch several
innings. He's going to throw eight shutout innings. We're talking about Aaron Civale here.
He does. He's the best pitcher that's ever lived. So I'm not too worried.
No, he's pretty all right. No, it sucks about Naquin, though. It's just – I would almost say the Jordan Lupo injury is just as damaging to the Indians' hopes and dreams as the Naquin, if only because they're both platoony players who serve a role but aren't, you know, just good role players. But, you know, when they're not – in the position that they should be placed in, then they're kind of useless, I suppose. I also like Jordan Luplo more. So
I do like Luplo. I'm glad he's back. I would like to have another. He's just basically Brandon Guyer, but could be better. He's more
25 years old. Yeah, exactly. Right, yeah. And there's hope that he'll learn how to hit, you know, opposite-handed pitching. So or same.
Where does that hope come from? I don't think we ever talked about that, but everybody always talks about like just let him play against both. Like he doesn't have a history of not being a platoon guy, right? It's just
he doesn't
what
really
he
have
is.
Much of a history. I think is what it really is. You know, he's a total of 133 major league games. He's always kind of hello Charlie. He's always kind of hit in the minors, and he was a top rated prospect for a while there. So I think, and the fact again, he is 25 years old. So. And that is how we always feel about prospects. This is the rule.
As long as they're young, that's fine. They're going to be great.
Yeah, they'll figure it out. I mean, Mike Trout figured out how to not hit high fastballs.
Everybody can do it. It's not that hard. Just don't swing at the high ones.
Just don't swing at the high ones. Come
that's
on,
what I'm
everyone.
Saying.
That's
I could be simple. A scout.
Golly
and I think
gee.
If Luplo can even be just that platoon bat, I feel like I'm happy with that trade. Oh, Eric Gonzalez was fun, but yeah, it's not that hard to beat it.
If he can be a Brandon Guyer slash, what was his name from 2016? Ryan Rayburn, but for the next like 5 or 6 years and just murder left-handed pitching. Yeah, man, that's fine. That is a vital piece who will be a folk hero type of guy. You know, it's just like a niche beloved guy for the Indians for a long time. Like all of us will be huge Jordan Luplo heads. Loop heads, I guess, would be a fun one.
Loop heads. We already Naquin heads, but now he's dead, so it's Loop heads. Loop heads, like you said. Yeah. Could we? No, that's not a good one. I was going to try to think of other names, but I couldn't think of any. Anyway, Luplo maniacs. We can't have more. It's just Naquin heads. You can't have other heads. That's
Looplaniacs? That's pretty good.
Looplaniacs. I like it. I like it. So yeah, we're going to go from a terrible story of Tyler Naquin's leg blowing apart to a more happy I guess it's happy, sort of. Is Carlos Carrasco coming back? I mean, the fact that he's
no, Matt, it's
back
sad
is happy.
And depressing, you butthead.
The fact that we have to celebrate this is sad because it was all he's been through, but it was such a great moment when he came back. He was on the mound. He got a standing ovation in Tampa Bay, and then it looked by the looks of it that he was crying about the tear up on the mound, so Lindor came up and gave him a hug and just tried to get him to calm back down, and that was a moment where if you're watching and you didn't cry at least a little bit, I'm not sure what you're doing existing without emotions. But how big is Carrasco coming back to the Indians now that he's been gone since June? He could be in the playoffs. He could be their Andrew Miller. He could be the – I'd assume he could go a couple innings if he really needs to. But I'm really excited to see how Terry Francona uses him, not so much in the regular season. I'd assume that's mostly getting him just back and ready for the playoffs if they make it. But I want to see especially how they use him when it really matters in October, when there's if God forbid we're in a wild card game, even in a short ALDS series, like where they use him. And also part of me is worried that he won't be used that much and we'll just see Adam Simber and Nick Goody be driven into the ground and Nick Whitgren won't be used either. And I don't know what Tito does half the time, but Carlos Carrasco being back on its own, it's exciting. It sucks that it had to happen and that we have to celebrate that he's back now from such a terrible injury, or not even injury, a terrible just thing of having leukemia, and he's already back from it. That alone is pretty incredible. So I don't know. Did you watch it, or are you excited for him to be back? I'm sure. And what do you think of him going forward on the Indians?
So you mentioned obviously the will we even see him pitch at all? And I think we've had the same conversation about one injured pitcher or another the last 3 years. I feel like about Will he come back for the playoffs and be a fireman? It'll be cool, huh? Right? Just like Tim Lincecum was in 20 whatever. Now,
every year that was Danny Salazar, though. That's the difference.
Well, no, actually, 2 years ago, I think Carrasco was that person once. I don't remember when. I feel like that's true. Remember, because he broke, I don't know. Anyway.
That was before like the string of goodness, though. There was a time when he was out and we thought he could be a reliever when he came back, right?
Is that what you're thinking of? Maybe, yeah. But anyway, to your point, this is the first time that we've had a quote-unquote guy of Terry Francona's be in this potential position. Like, I'm sure he likes, you know, Clipper or Simber or Woodgren or whatever. But, I mean, he's been, you know, I mean, he's him and Carrasco have been working together for a long time now, and they like each other from by all accounts. And they're, you know, and Carrasco is also just a, you know, backbone player of the team. So that alone, I think, is the reason that he could actually have some sort of outsized role as like a reliever when things get kind of big. That plus, you know, obviously we've been seeing some issues with the kind of big four or five relief guys over the last couple of weeks. It seems like with fatigue, particularly with Hand, we lost his fastball and he was pitching like shit. Whitgren's kind of taking a step back, you know, whatever. But if nothing else, it brings some, you know, it's like calling up a guy on the 40 man, but also it's a guy who, when he's at his best, he's one of the 5 or 10 best pitchers in baseball.
Yeah.
I'm curious and excited to see what kind of pitcher, if they continue to use him in a one or multiple inning thing, what kind of pitcher he becomes, because I've said it before, I've written about it countless times. The value of Carlos Carrasco comes in his pitch mix as much as in the sheer value of any one of his pitches. He has all these amazing pitches. His his curveball is on par with that of like Aaron Sanchez, who's now in the Astros and is supposed to turn into a, you know, like in terms of spin rate and stuff like that. And his fastball is great. If you look at in terms of strikeout or whiff rates for pitches, he's top 25 with 3 or 4 different pitches. And, you know, I think that's a combination of they're all great pitches, but also they're all great. You know, they all work together well. So I'm excited just to see purely how he uses himself. You know what I mean? When he came on Sunday, he threw all 2-seamers. That was it. Which is cool. That's fine.
Yeah, we can't judge a whole lot from that one.
No, and that's what I'm saying. It's nothing. No, it's less than a data point. It's noise more than anything else. So that's why I think it's interesting. And if he does get used in more of like a, you know, he comes in the fifth and pitches through the seventh, how will he work it? Will he work it like, as though he's a starter? He's been pitching like a reliever since what, 2015 or whatever. You know, when he came back from whatever and, you know, came back from the pen, became a starter again. He's been pitching out of the stretch ever since. So it's definitely something he'd be comfortable with and something that I think will work better than any of our weird pipe dreams of Danny Salazar or whoever.
Those are dead. Those are very, very dead.
Never. He's still out there. Never give up on Danny Salazar.
And Carrasco also has that uptick in velocity too. He was at 95, 96 on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe he reached 97 in AAA. We're going
to
see that.
Yeah. And if you remember back to when he was a relief pitcher for that, you know, that brief half a season, what was that, 2014, I guess it was. I mean, he was throwing like 97, 98 because it's there in the arm to do it. It's just when you're going 30 starts a season, you don't need to do that quite so much. It's God, he was so goddamn good. He'd throw 134 innings and, you know, 12 of them. You know, how many in 40 appearances, only 14 starts. And
I especially like the idea of that this is Francona's guy is one of these guys, I think.
Right.
I think Simber has turned into one of those, and I'm not sure why. He seems to be one that Francona leans on in high leverage situations, but I love the idea of Carrasco
too.
Being there.
I think the weird factor of Simber probably factors, but we're talking about
like feel things like his arm is weird, that'll throw him off, and then it never does.
Oh, and it does, man. I mean, he's got the lowest release. Like the ball is released below where it hits the strike zone routinely. Which is confusing, to say the least.
It doesn't seem to matter a whole lot, though.
Well, it does. I mean, again, look at those splits against righties. He is an absolute murderer against right-handed hitting. So that's why he still does have value. That's why I wrote about it last year, because I was like, oh, he's going to kill all these the MVP candidate hitters out there. You're Mike's Trout and your Aaron's Judge and your Mookie's Betts. But then he didn't. He didn't instead do that. Turns out, no.
Turns out he can't always beat Mike Trout or future Roberto Perez. Just not every time, just once in a while.
I mean, no one can beat future Roberto Perez. The man's a god. But back to Carrasco. No, if nothing else, it's exciting and fun. I'm very happy he's back because he's always been a favorite of mine. just
oh, you can't not love Carrasco. Yeah.
And if only for on-field stuff. Like I know he more so it seems, and really any player I've seen, and probably since honestly Victor Martinez truly has embraced the city and the team and everything, and feels truly at home. And like I think, you know, just like with Martinez, if he got traded, he'd probably just cry his eyes out. He really seems happy in Cleveland, and that's, you know, that's a rarity. I know we were joking about it before the podcast. No one will ever know what we were saying. But
and no, it definitely it feels genuine too. Like is more than Trevor Bauer never bought at all. I think his was all. I've always thought that he did all his charity stuff for like a shield, like he can say and do what he wants. And say, no, look, I'm a good person. I do all his charities, and I feel like he's gonna do that wherever he goes. I don't think he cared about that Cleveland specifically that much. And even like it's not the same thing as Trevor Bauer in any way, but like Lindor, I feel like he's going to embrace any city he's in, and he's going to treat it as his city. He knows he's the big baseball guy there. He's done it really well for Cleveland as a great ambassador, but I don't know if he, like for Carrasco, it seems like it's special to him. And like, it's Cleveland specifically. If he goes somewhere else, like he'll still like Carlos Carrasco is another one, or Carlos Santana is another one too, where it's Cleveland specifically. It's not just embracing the city that he's currently in. Like, I feel like if Lindor goes somewhere else, he's going to be a great ambassador for there too. And good for him and good for the city. I'm not like bemoaning him for that at all, but I just feel like there's certain players that attach to a certain city, and Carrasco and Santana are two of them that attach to Cleveland really well, and that's why everybody's embraced them so much.
And that's great, but also too, it's just the on-field stuff. I've always liked watching him pitch. And always, I take that back. But he's had probably the most interesting, even more so than I say Trevor Bauer, who was, you know, the young phenom, struggling, building himself, always in the media. He helped us learn, I think, a lot more about pitching than we ever had any right to know or probably care enough to know, honestly. But Carrasco, just the arc from, you know, other guy in the Cliff Lee deal to total head case to injury to fighting his way back to, I don't know, just turning into an absolute stud. He's been truly wonderful and somehow always overlooked, if only because of who else is on the team. But, you know, you look at his just over the last, I don't know, whatever, from 2015 to 2018, he had a 340 ERA, 180 innings per season. It's just always great. Always a great player, always a great pitcher, and always a great person, too. And so to see him able to come back like this, it's neat. And knowing he'll be on the Indians for quite some time, too, is also...
So looking ahead, we'll wrap up this relatively short episode with looking at, I said in the intro, I don't know, am I right or wrong that really this is the only series? I think you've disagreed with me in the past, but
always.
Like, if they'd have to sweep the series at this point now to make it really matter. But I mean, if you blow these six games in, what is it, 9 days they play against the Twins, I mean, that's pretty much it for the division. If they lose more than half, maybe. If they get swept one or the other, it's really bad, but
they're buried. I
thought it was really good that they lined up Bieber and Clevinger. They're going to pitch four of the six games. So if the Indians are doing what they can to set themselves up to be well, and then play also the Angels in between, which hopefully they could just run over, but I don't know if it'll actually happen that way. It kind of sucks that the Indians are going to fly. They play in Minnesota. They go to the West Coast, play some stupidly late games on the West Coast, and then go to Cleveland. So I don't know if that's going to hamper them at all for the last part of the series.
So that's probably not a big deal. But
yeah, I would think it sucks for me, Merritt. I'm thinking about me here.
Sure.
This is sure. Who cares about these players and they're sacrificing everything for me to watch on my couch? I got to stay up slightly later than usual.
I know you feel,
it's
man.
Terrible.
The Raiders play at 10:20 on Monday night. It's terrible.
I feel so bad for you, Merritt. You have to watch the Raiders.
That's Lord
the
worst of mercy. Part of it.
But yeah, so what do you think of, do the Indians have a shot here, or are we just going to wait for them to
slowly die? Obviously,
die?
The last time they played them, they took 2 of 3, right? They I don't know. They need to win, because if they win 5 of 6, they're still 2 back, I think, right? Or 3 back, something like that.
Oh, that's just depressing that they could win 5 of 6 and still be several back.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's just because stupid baseball math is dumb. I think that's how it works out. But anyway. Yeah,
they just need the Twins to stop being so good, like for a couple
weeks.
Well,
that's the thing. Like the positive to all this is that they have the tools to at least quiet the Twins. Between obviously Clevinger and Bieber, we have two Cy Young candidates. Not, you know, obviously they're not going to come in first or second, but still, I think both will get a decent amount of top five votes at the very least. And then the third being I don't mean to toot the Aaron Civale horn too much, but I almost feel like he's purpose built to beat this team, if only because they want to hit fly balls and he wants to let them hit fly balls, but he doesn't let them barrel it up. Is that a dangerous dance? Oh, Matt, the most dangerous there is. But it's at the same time, as long as he executes his pitches, you know, then it's the right mix of pitches. I mean, they're all these guys who love to hit the ball down, who love to hit sinker balls and like sliders down and whatnot. And he doesn't throw that. He throws high spin fastballs up in the zone, making you want to hit it, and then you hit it bad. And it could work in their favor. I don't know. But like you said, and we've been talking about this for a month or so, this is the entire season, which I don't think putting all the eggs in this basket is the right way to go. It's not like it's easy the rest of the, besides these six games. The Angels aren't terrible. Mike Trout will always have something to say. The Tigers are terrible. The White Sox are bad.
They have nothing to say.
But the Phillies and Nationals both have aims to make the playoffs, and they need to win those games just as much as the Indians need to win those games.
That could be a great series at the end of the season. Like you could, I know. You live near the Nationals. I'm assuming you're going to at least one of those, right?
I'll go two of those. Yeah, hell yeah.
Are you? You're going to be wearing your Indians uniform?
Damn, I can't go to one of them. Fuck. Oh, well. I've got two of them.
There you go.
But, yeah, I will wear Indians gear. I will wear, of course. Everyone will go, well, whatever. Who cares? I'll go, hey, all right.
It's the Nationals. Nobody really cares there.
No, they're just there
because they got tickets from some work and thing. And who cares?
Yeah, they're all just tickets donated by some PAC or a lobbyist. It's great. Great fans down there. And
you can scout future Indian Anthony Rendon, though.
Ooh, that's true. And future Indian Juan Soto. Perfect.
Totally. They're going to get him. Absolutely.
It's a quick trade. The learners are stupid and bad at what they do. So
that's going to be some motivation there. But the Nationals clearly listen to this podcast. They're going to print out your quote and stick it on their locker.
It'll
leave us a bad review on Apple Podcasts.
The people who made the schedule, by which I mean that stupid computer, really accidentally stumbled into a few great ones here, though. But with the Twins being both weekend series, it really, and also being so huge and everything like that, it's a happy little accident, I suppose.
They stuff the division games at the end now, right? That's a purpose.
They do. They pile up division games, I think, at either end of the season.
Right. But finishing with the Nationals is good.
I don't like that being in the first half of the season. I think it ends up creating too much stratification, I guess. But then, of course, you get fun races and things like that.
And that's one of the things. I don't know if we talked about this before, but like people always say you should just have an even schedule and don't do divisions. Just have
a conference, honestly.
And you get this many. Yes, it's made up drama, but who cares? That's every sport is just made up drama. They're hitting a ball with a stick. Like, it adds these fake races, because otherwise, what would the Indians be right now? It would not be nearly as fun as trying to chase down these goddamn Twins if they were just.
They'd just be a wild card team. That wouldn't be there wouldn't be anything going on here at all. It would just be whatever.
Right. There's no rivalry. They'd be chasing the Rays or the A's.
They'd be much more vague and occasional. Like, that's the thing. It forges a harder rivalry than you ever end up with in the NBA. Like, the NBA is much more transient rivalries. Outside of Lakers Celtics, you have like ones that kind of happen. Like, I never really felt like Cavs Warriors was a rivalry. They just played each other every June. Like, is that a rivalry? I guess. I don't know. It was more of a LeBron James sort of thing. But
yeah, that never felt like much. It's weird because they played four NBA championships in a row. It never felt like anything to me.
No, I mean, other than getting your ass whooped, I guess. But yeah.
That feels like something, all right. I'm not a huge Cavs fan. I'm okay.
No, I know. But it's more exciting this way. I think it's fun. I mean, it's either this or you end up getting the. I'm watching a lot of soccer lately, and I kind of enjoy the way they do it too. They do the exact. You know, it's there's only one league, and it's up or down. You either win it or you don't.
Don't they do exciting. A bunch of crazy shit too? Like, weren't you gonna? Did you write about that, or were you going
I've
to?
I talk about it all the goddamn time.
Yeah,
and I still
how baseball
love it.
Should implement it. Yeah,
an FA Cup kind of a thing. Yeah, well,
just swap shit around in the middle of the season.
American soccer does it too. I didn't realize it relatively recently, but they do have the U.S. Open, which is every single soccer team from four different levels plays in it, and it's super neat. I think it's a really rad thing, you know. But
I just want to see the Yankees like crush some low A team.
Just shitting on the just going down to Montgomery and dumping on the biscuits. Yeah,
take a big old dump on the biscuits. Beat up their own single A team. Who is the Biscuits?
Staten Island Yankees.
So Rays.
They just head over to Staten Island and just wail on him for a while and go home.
They barely have to stop. Their buses are still parked outside.
They just call up their entire AAA to send them down there.
That's great. Wow.
Anyway, yeah, big series coming up. It's fun. I'm talking about the one against the White Sox, of course.
Of course, obviously. Game one will be done by the time this post, but we'll see if... I mean, if they flub that, then who cares about the Twins? You're going for the wild card at that point.
Yeah, go and get swept by the White Sox. Whoops, well, that's it then. All right. Have a great year.
I've had a moral objection to rooting for the wild card, because, I mean, it's always a fallback. But, I mean, I'm getting to the point where, all right, let's get the wild card.
Oh, no, and we'll definitely have a clear picture of that on, you know, the morning of September 9th. We'll know where we are,
Yeah, and on the same note of liking divisions, I like the wild card. I like that it incentivizes you to win your division, but it also doesn't keep more people out of the playoffs. I think it's a perfect compromise.
The way
and I also don't want to play in it.
The way they redid it is definitely way better. Having the two of them and you having to play in a game, because it could really fuck up a whole season just by accident, which I think is delightful.
Just the fact that it makes you want to win your division without taking away playoff spots, I thought was brilliant. It adds more playoff spots. It makes it so, good Lord, you better win or you're going to be in a roll of dice over your whole entire season. It all comes down to this one game and the Indians are going to play in it. God damn it. I hate it. But I also like
it. And we have to remember, too, you know, that, I mean, the Twins have to win games, too. So I know that they're very good and they hit a billion bombs. And they keep on winning games, yes. But they have to play, they got Red Sox, the Nationals come to town, White Sox, Royals, God damn it. Oh, never mind.
So they have the AL Central to play. Yeah, they're going to be okay. I think they're going to be okay.
They have the AL Central, the Red Sox, and the Nationals, basically. So
the AL Central, one team who's probably not very good, and also the Nationals. It's good. Shit. It's fine. So anyway, that wild card game.
I hate you, computer, who designed this stupid schedule. I hate you.
All right, Merritt. That's going to do it for this week, which is definitely recorded on a Sunday. We're not recording on Labor Day because that might violate something.
Mm-hmm.
At least ethically, but we're definitely recording on a Sunday. But anyway, we will. If you're listening now, leave us a nice review on iTunes, Spotify. I don't think Spotify does reviews, but whatever. Let your friends know you listen to it. Let us know you're listening to it. It's always been neat. And talk to you next week.
Bye.